From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 26th, 2026.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 26 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine Senator Susan Collins says she personally urged the Trump administration's top trade negotiator to remove the latest American tariffs on Canadian goods. Kevin Miller has more.
Collins says she spoke with U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer for about a half hour on Tuesday and told him that the latest tariffs are only harming Maine businesses and families. Collins says many products grown or harvested in Maine, such as blueberries, potatoes, and lobster, are processed in Canada and shipped back to Maine. So she says tariffs are making those end products far more expensive.
This is not China we're dealing with. It's Canada, our best friend, a country with whom our economy is completely intertwined and with whom we have so many families that are linked as well.
Collins has voted to end tariffs on Canadian goods and has criticized the Trump administration's unilateral imposition of tariffs without congressional approval. But her opponent this November, Troy Jackson, and other Democrats claim she's not using her influence as chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee to push back against Trump. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Republican gubernatorial candidate Bobby Charles told activists last week that he'll ask President Donald Trump's border czar to send ICE agents to Maine polling places this November. Steve Missler has more.
Charles's comments were in a leaked audio clip obtained by the Bangor Daily News and came from a speech he delivered last week to a young Republicans group in Arundel. In the clip, Charles claims to be friends with border czar Tom Homan and says he'll ask him to send ICE agents to polling places to make sure illegal immigrants don't vote.
I'm going to make an appeal for ICE and marshals to be at our voting booths.
Such a request would likely violate several laws, including one banning federal officers from interfering in elections and another that bars armed federal agents from polling places. Charles's campaign is not disputing the authenticity of the audio. In a statement, it said Charles will ask the Departments of Justice and Homeland Security for all legal assistance to guard against illegal voting. Voting by non-citizens is already illegal and rare. Still, Trump has repeatedly claimed without evidence that it's widespread and has sought to use the government to prove it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
ICE has arrested another Cumberland County Jail Corrections Officer. As Ari Snyder reports, it's at least the fourth jail officer arrested since the beginning of the second Trump administration.
In a statement, a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said agents arrested Nilton Hiberu, originally from Angola, on Saturday. The spokesperson said Hiberu entered the country in 2022 with permission to stay until the following year, but, quote, overstayed his welcome. It's an increasingly common tactic as the Trump administration targets asylum seekers and others who have filed for immigration relief after entering the country on temporary visas. Sheriff Kevin Joyce confirmed that Hiberu has worked at the jail for the last several years and said that he's, quote, a very good employee and passed a polygraph test to get hired. Joyce questioned whether ICE is targeting the worst of the worst. ICE's online detainee tracker does not specify where Hiberu is being held. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Leaders of Penobscot Community Healthcare say the nonprofit needs $3 million within the next 30 to 60 days to avoid bankruptcy. As Patty White reports, the state's largest federally qualified health center says it will be forced to curtail services and locations without a financial infusion.
In an op-ed and statement, Penobscot Community Healthcare President and CEO Lori Dwyer says there are several reasons for the financial challenges, including underfunding, delayed payments from state and federal governments, skyrocketing costs, and millions that are owed by a former healthcare partner. Dwyer says the health center, which serves 50,000 patients across multiple locations, including people who are uninsured or on Medicare, has already cut services and staff. She's calling on state policymakers and leaders to take action to avoid further cuts to primary care. A spokesperson for Governor Janet Mills says the state has increased payment rates to health centers in recent years, but federal policies under the Trump administration will likely make the situation worse. This week, 9 Bangor area lawmakers sent a letter to Attorney General Aaron Fry asking that $1 million in opioid settlement funding be allocated to the Hope House Transitional Housing Program to sustain medical care provided by Penobscot Community Health Care. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The Maine Department of Environmental Protection is taking legal action against pharmaceutical company Mallinckrodt for failing to complete cleanup of the former Ultrachem site in Orrington. As Molly Enking reports, it's one of Maine's most contaminated sites with a history that spans decades.
Located along the Penobscot River, the former Ultrachem plant produced chemicals commonly used for pulp and paper. The plant released mercury-contaminated wastewater into the Penobscot River estuary back in the 1960s and 70s, according to court documents. For over two decades, environmental groups and state regulators have been trying to force the plant's owners to complete cleanup of the mercury pollution in the river. Following a lawsuit in 2000, Mallinckrodt reached a settlement with the state and agreed to pay more than $180 million toward remediation. Last year, the DEP warned the company that it was falling short to address cleanup orders in a timely manner. Now, the Maine DEP has filed a formal complaint in the Penobscot Superior Court for failure to complete the job. A request for comment from Mallinckrodt was not immediately returned. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
Just about anyone who's spent time on northern Maine's Allegash River has heard of Norm. As the owner of Pelletier's Campground in St. Francis near Fort Kent, Norm Letalien has outfitted and shuttled paddlers for 40 years and has a reputation for his deep knowledge of the river and wealth of stories. But now in his 70s, he says the demands of the job are taking a toll. Ari Snyder visited him at work in his final season.
Okay, could you pass me those red straps, please?
On a muggy summer evening in St. Francis, the air thick with black flies, Norm Letalien is standing on top of a Ford transport van, securing three canoes to a roof rack for a family heading out the next morning.
We'll do this one a little different, though.
Letalien coordinates hundreds of trips like this one each summer, hosting campers, renting out canoes, and dispatching a team of drivers to shuttle clients and their vehicles down rugged logging roads to put-ins and takeouts along the 92-mile Allegash Wilderness Waterway. He runs the operation from a picnic table in a garage at the campground, his reservation system a spiral-bound notebook.
Yeah, I'm from the old school. I'm not like you young guys. I don't have everything on the computer. And I find it's a lot easier for me this way.
It's a lot to keep track of and constantly changing. There's already been a mishap today involving a Boy Scout troop on the rapids below Churchill Dam, in which one of his boats took a beating.
Oh, they flipped over and it looks like they messed up one of my canoes pretty bad. It's like a U shape and it's full of water.
River trips often begin with a map orientation as Letalien walks paddlers through the campsites, fishing spots, and potential hazards of the Allegash.
So I'm sorry, you're talking about, that's not a portage there, is it?
Those are class one rapids.
Okay.
And like I said.
Like the path of the river itself, Letalien took a winding route to this line of work. He grew up in the town of Eagle Lake, enlisted in the Army 10 days out of high school, and was stationed in Germany for a few years. When he came back to the county, he got a degree, started working part-time at his father-in-law's campground, and landed a job at the Great Northern Paper Company, until he was laid off in 1986 during a tumultuous time in the industry.
They came out with a nasty word called restructuring and kicked us out the door.
By then, his father-in-law was ready to retire from his campground and outfitting business, and Letalien took over full-time.
I never thought that I'd do it this long, but it sort of got, like I said, it got in my blood some, and all in all, I've really enjoyed it.
Over the years, he's met a few memorable characters, some of them famous.
I'll tell you this one. I met RFK Jr. down here.
This was back in 1978 when Letalian was helping his father-in-law run the business. RFK Jr. came with a few other Kennedys, and aside from a security detail, Letalian says they were like any other campers.
They wanted some firewood. I said, hey, there's some across the road. Here's the old pickup. Help yourself, you know.
Then there was the time he realized a fellow veteran he was driving to the river was actually one of his Army training sergeants from 40 years ago.
And he signed my basic training yearbook.
Another time, he found himself in the middle of a legal dispute after two vacationing couples had a disagreement while on the river. One pair left the trip early and drove back to Connecticut, stranding the other couple in the North Main woods without a car.
I went to court, you know. He wanted me to write out a statement what had happened. One was suing the other there.
Given his history on the river, Letalian says clients often ask him how many times he's paddled the Allegash himself.
And I'll go real slow, and I'll go like this, and I'll go zero. I've been too busy catering to people all these years, you know.
But that may soon change. At 73, he says the physical strain and 16-hour days are wearing him down, and that after this season ends in October, he'll retire. Letalian says he's looking forward to spending more time with the grandkids, traveling to see his Army buddies, and, finally, paddling a portion of the iconic river he's helped so many others experience.
Probably going to take one of them, that little blue canoe there, or the purple one, 13-footer, and start like an Amzaskus, 4 days, 3 nights. I think I could do it in 3 days, 2 nights, sometime, before it's too late. Yeah.
But on this day, as the sun drops low and campers settle in for the night, Letalian is back at the van, on a stepladder, to finish tying down some canoes. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join Irwin Gratz for Morning Edition, starting at 5 a.m. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.